up? What's up? Welcome to another episode of All Over VoiceOver with Kip VH. I'm your host, Kip VH, and I'm so thrilled to be joined by my dear friend, my colleague, who another voice actor who we've worked at the same agency. I met you like the first day I came into CESD. My first day in there, you were sitting on the bench.
Wow.
And Amelia Barella is with us. So thank you again so much for joining me today. So.
Oh my gosh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I'm flattered.
Like, it's coming back to what we were talking before that intro, like there's nothing like that feeling of getting invigorated by something, whether it's a new piece of information or a new piece of inspiration or a new discovery that you make.
Yes.
It makes you feel like so excited about your career and your place in the business. Like what talk to me about that feeling, or how does that idea resonate with you? Like, is that consistent with your experience? I go nuts whenever I discover something new, and then I just want to like a kid on a skateboard just trying to do an ollie or like a flip or something.
Right. I wish I could ride a skateboard. I tried. I suck at it. But yes, it does feel like that. I think we all are just, as you know, we're all trying so hard to book jobs and to, you know, play and be creative and make a living and do our best work. And, you know, and then we meet these coaches and these teachers along the way, and everybody, you know, like I kind of launched into way before. Sorry.
It's all right.
Like, oh, let me tell you this right now before we even get down to like what we're really, whatever you want to talk about. But I feel so invigorated now that I have this new way of looking at things. I feel less confused. I feel less unsure of myself. I actually go into the booth and I'm like, I'm really excited to get to the copy, because I feel like all I have to do, as corny as it sounds, is be me.
Yeah.
And that might work for some people. That might, you know, maybe other people like to underline their copy and accentuate certain words and think about this and think about that. And that's fine. You know, if that, whatever works for you is what's important.
Right.
And I just, yes, this new way of looking at it has made me feel like, oh, I can't wait to see what I'm going to read today, even if it's for like hemorrhoids, you know. it feels exciting to like try and just be real and be that voice that they are hoping to hear, you know, for their campaign. So yes, it's always exciting. Totally.
I remember taking it was through Voice Actors Network. It had to be maybe my first or second year in town. I was so hungry to get into that space, and Charlie Adler was teaching one night.
Oh, I love him.
Isn't he? He's the best. He's just the greatest.
That is the other coach that I worked with that like changed my thought process. But continue. Mm-hmm. Yes, go.
Well, I know that you did this exercise, because Charlie calls it his exercise, where all the copy is face down on the stand. And then you get in a line behind everybody, and then you walk up to the microphone, you flip over the copy, and you just read. And like that exercise. And no matter what you get, it's straight up Russian roulette, but it underlined the value of what you already bring to the table without all your prep. And you can go back and fix stuff, but there is that diminishing return of like, I'm going to spend 45 minutes on one, and I got, you know what I mean? Like you.
Yes, 100%. Sometimes we can just overwork something to death, you know, and it just becomes this perfectionist thing. And I think that's where it can really ruin just that gut instinct of like, no, I know what this is. Like, it doesn't have to be so difficult, you know, it doesn't have to be so pushed. But Charlie, oh my gosh. Yeah. I took his 4-week class, and, I mean, we're so lucky to be in LA and work with like the best people in the business that are all working animated actors forever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
And basically he told me, part your pantyhose. And when he said, part your pantyhose, and he said that to everybody, that was it. I got it. I was like, oh yeah. Animation is just going in there. And I mean, not just, but it's like, go in there and lose it. Like, yeah. Stop holding back. Stop thinking. Like, just be it, you know? And that made so much sense to me. And I mean, obviously, like, for animation, I'm a little more, I don't book animation as much. So it's, you know, I wish I part my pantyhose for Charlie every time I'm in the booth, but I definitely, I work up to parting my pantyhose because there's so much more there, you know, you've really got to read the sides. Like there's so much more going on in animation sides than there is in like a commercial copy, say, you know, like there's all the stuff that's happening in between the lines, the stage directions.
Right.
So sometimes I like mumble the first read or two, and then I really like, I try to part the pantyhose, but
right.
It's like, it's so funny how one or, you know, one sentence and like everything that people have been trying to teach you clicks.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like really this missing, this one missing key that comes in. It's like a puzzle of 500 pieces and you got 498 and you're looking under the boxes and you're checking your pockets. And then someone's like, oh, this. And then you go, of course, that's it. And then you say something a teacher said to you 6 years before that suddenly makes sense in a different way. And it is this, it's like a crystal.
Yeah, it's life changing.
You know, it really is. Oh, and like,
it is.
And a side note off of that. And I've just recently started booking some animation, like right at the beginning of pandemic.
Oh, heck yeah.
After swinging at it for so long. And then the difference between how I approach a piece of animated audition copy versus how I walk into the booth for this session. And
ooh, do tell.
It's a weird difference, dude. Like there's a sense of, I don't know if this is how you feel about a piece of animation copy, but I always face it kind of like the wall at Ninja Warrior. Like I want to go in and just, and beast it and tear into it and part my pantyhose and all that other stuff. But there is still that sense of, okay, here we go. I got to get myself, you know what I mean? But like walking into the booth, doing a pass and then going, great, let's cover it the way I'm typically accustomed to in a commercial. Wow. I find myself spending more time on commercial reads in the session than anything that we do in animation.
And right.
That's right. Really weird.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just that advertising and marketing is much more, they just, because they work with clients, who know, and clients are, I don't know, are they just more particular? You know, they just want to cover all these different bases because it could be approached from all these different angles. Not that animation can't, but I guess with animation, it's like, if they think you have the essence of the character that they heard in your audition, then they're like, yeah, we trust that. Go with it. Whereas like marketing and advertising might maybe just, is it more like particular, do you think?
It may
be.
I think in animation, because it's something I've wanted for so long, I make it more special in my head than it really is. It's like Charlie says that all the time of like, it's just cartoons. It's just cartoons. Just go in there and do the cartoon. Right. And like, and I go, yeah, it's just cartoons, but I want to be in cartoons. And then the difference of
I know.
Right. Like it's
throw it all up against the wall and just see what sticks and walk away.
That's
it. Make your mess and go crazy. Yeah. Like, what's that show? Double Dare. What was it that where they destroyed like the house? I can't remember. Yes. They go in and destroy the house. And I always was mad at them because they never destroyed it all the way. It was like, just go in and destroy that house, you know, throw the vases around, go crazy. And then you're done, you know, have the most fun you can have and then walk away.
Exactly.
Why not?
Exactly. Well,
actually, I did want to say, like, over the pandemic, I was, you know, hanging a little bit with a friend and her kid outside at this pool.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it was a little later and it was safer, you know, you can go and be outside. I sound terrible. I wear a mask. I sanitize. I have my first vaccination. I'm not like one of those crazy people, but anywho, like hanging out with her kid who's 6 years old and like making funny voices and singing Les Poissons to him from, you know, Les Poissons, Les Poissons. Like that was another thing that made me think about cartoons and animation. Like what made him laugh? Like what funny voices did he like to do? And like, I forgot, like to be around a kid, you get to get back into that child brain and you get to have, think like a kid again and have fun like a kid. And I was like, oh, I have to bring more of that to my auditions too. Like this is all to make kids like laugh and have fun and enjoy watching a cartoon. So that really helped me out this year too. So That's another good thing came out of the pandemic.
That's so great. That's such an important thing to remember is like your audience and like, connecting to, you know, the difference between a Disney Junior piece versus, you know, some high octane action thing. And like, you know, is my audience 10 or are they 4? Is it, you know, is this part of that constant stream? That's such a great thing to remember.
Yeah. So tricky too, though. Like what you just said, all your audience, you're right. It's so different. All the different genres of cartoons.
Yeah.
Completely. That we have to keep in mind when we're auditioning.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, tell me.
Sorry. Yeah.
So I want to roll the clock back on you. Like where are you from originally? Like, how did you find yourself doing what you do? Like, let's start where you're from. Like, where are you from?
You're so cute. I love how much you are making me feel like I'm some big important person. And I'm so not, but I love it. Okay. So I was born in Montreal, Canada. And then my family moved to New Jersey when I was 5 and I grew up in Jersey and I went to school at NYU in New York and I got my first agent there when I was 21. And I started going on for voiceover.
Amazing. And so let me roll back to like to Please New Jersey. Roll it. So when you were growing up in New Jersey, like what? I mean, not to glaze over Canada, but I know you probably don't remember a whole lot from 0 to 5.
No,
but,
glaze it.
We'll glaze it. Now that you're an American citizen, let's talk about these things.
USA. Just
right. What were you interested in? Like, what were you like as a kid? Were you into cartoons? Was this something that you wanted to do? You know, I know you also did like,
oh my
you know,
God, yeah. I mean, I didn't even know that like adults did cartoons. It didn't, that didn't register with me watching cartoons as a kid.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even get that. And I loved cartoons. Like I loved the Smurfs, the Chipmunk. Wait, what were the
Rescue Rangers? The Chippendales. It was the Chippendales. No, Rescue Rangers.
Yeah, exactly. No, Alvin, Simon, Theodore.
Oh, yeah, Alvin and the Chipmunks.
The Chipmunks.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, yes, I loved cartoons. And I always wanted to be an actor and a singer and a dancer. Mm. And the on-camera thing did not work out for me. I wish I had stuck with stand-up comedy more because I really did enjoy doing that. But I didn't. I'm just doing voiceover.
It's all right. It's totally fine, dude. What was your?
I know there's like a delay, so.
Right. It makes it really entertaining. I have to be
okay. Good.
Preemptive.
Yeah.
What was the nature of your study at NYU? Like, were you on a theater track or was it film and TV or was it? Was it like a general communications or did you get a, like, what did you study while you were there?
I was at the Stella Adler Conservatory for the first 2 years. And then I went, well, it sounds so fancy, but like I was 18, you know, I mean, an 18-year-old going to study theater. I don't know. I just, from the suburbs of Jersey, I'm sure there were much, much better actors than me. I know there were, but then I studied abroad for a year in London and then in Florence. And then I came back and I did a year at Stone Street School of Film and Television.
Excellent.
At NYU. So
amazing.
Yes. And that was really, really, really weird and hard to learn how to act for film and TV. Hmm. Like, I was not used to that at all.
What was that? Where was the challenge in that? Just that shift of working from stagecraft to the small size of film and TV, more technical, or
Yes. Yeah. Because, you know, I feel like when you watch a film as an actor and you don't really know how films are made, everything still seems so heightened and dramatic, you know, and there's so much emotion when you're watching a film or a TV show, and especially sitcoms too. Like, I loved sitcoms, you know, I love the Golden Girls. Yeah. I used to watch that with my mom. I still watch the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
And I loved, you know, Will and Grace and, just like all, obviously like Facts of Life, like as a kid,
right?
But like it seems so big, and then you get on camera and you're told like you're way too big, you're way too exaggerated. Like I honestly feel like I would have had more success if I had been born earlier and like been a vaudeville actor, you know? Like I wish I'd been able to like mug and make big quirky like noises and wacky dances and just been like an all-around goof.
Yeah.
But yeah, so film and television was just like, oh, you stop making so many big faces, like don't telegraph your emotions, like it's all in the eyes. And I was just like, I don't know how to act like that. I don't know how to do that.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So totally that was understand. The challenge for me.
And then when did you start with stand-up? Were you doing that simultaneously when you got done with school, or while you were in school yet?
God, I wish. I wish I'd started stand-up in my 20s. No, I never even considered stand-up. I didn't start until I came to LA. And
no
I
kidding.
Think I was 30 when I started, because like, acting for me wasn't really, I mean, I was auditioning, but I wasn't really getting anything. And I found the whole process of auditioning and going to auditions very stressful. Like, yeah. I just have a thin skin. And so, you know, I started doing stand-up because I was working with this life coach, which is so California. and so he was like, you should do stand-up because I have a lot of students that do stand-up and I can help you do that because I used to do that. So then I started that, and that was hard.
Yeah.
That was hard, but that was more me, because I could be on stage and I could talk about whatever I wanted to talk about, and I didn't have to memorize lines. And,
yeah.
you know, if I got nervous and went up on something, I could just, you know, look at a piece of paper on my stool, you know,
right.
underneath my water bottle. Like, it's not that... it's more casual, and it was just more fun to have that like theatrical connection with a live audience.
Yeah.
I really liked that, but you know, that didn't last longer than like 4 years. So
okay.
I'm a quitter, Kip. I'm a quitter.
Well,
that's
like,
what I am.
But like, you know, I told you in my correspondence with you, like, you know, you're, like, I hear your reads. When I hear your reads, I hear your inherent comic timing. You're so funny and so natural. And you really bring wonderful, natural comedy to where it needs to be. Like, your reel makes me laugh out loud. That never happens. And, you know, I mean, I remember talking about stand-up when I first started, because Chris Edgerly was doing it. We were just mixing it up,
right.
and talking about places to. I have a notebook somewhere with the open mics that you told me about, like to go do it.
Oh my gosh! Right.
But
right.
but like scrolling back to the origins of your VO career, like you started doing VO like straight out the gate out of college in New York, or did you get like repped, or where did your voiceover life begin?
I did. Yes. They started sending me out mainly for commercials, like on-camera commercials and voiceovers. And so I just started booking some voiceovers, which was like, whoa, I can't believe I even know how to do this.
Yeah.
But apparently, I guess reading copy wasn't that hard for me back then. And also the style was so different. So it was, you know, it was really okay to be an announcer.
Yeah.
It was really okay to like sell things. Yeah. And that was fine. And I did it. And then stupidly, like really stupidly, I decided to not pursue voiceover when I moved to LA. And I was like, I'm going to focus on being an on-camera actress. Uh-huh. And so then I didn't do it for like 7 years.
Wow.
And then I had a manager at the time and I was like, why don't I get my demo together? Because I have this work from things I did in New York. So
yeah.
I pulled that together and he sent it out to a few agencies and CESD was the first one to respond. And I auditioned for them and then they signed me and it's been a decade with them.
Amazing.
I think it's been a decade. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's been great. I really love doing voiceover. And I mean, it's such a great profession, isn't it?
It really is.
Do you like it better than on camera, or do you like on camera just as much, or what's your feeling on it?
You know how, like, this is the thought that's coming to me, and maybe I'll use this answer again down the road when asked, because I like the idea. You know how you love pizza and you also love chocolate cake?
That's
how on camera and voiceover is for me.
I
love them both for completely different reasons because,
right.
You know, it's like you said, there's nothing like going into a room and being taught. I think you put this in a post on LinkedIn today, I think, where you were like, there's nothing better than going into a room that they expect a 2-hour session and you nail it in 40 and they're like, you were amazing. You know,
yeah.
Thank you. That is a really wonderful, it hits you not only in terms of your ego and that feeling of like, hey, I'm good at this, but it's also like, I'm fiscally responsible with my talent. I saved them money.
Right.
I saved them time.
Right.
And I can take direction and be specific and solve problems that gives me a greater
right.
satisfaction. You know what I mean? As a participant in the creation rather than expressing like a fountain of ideas, you know? It's like I'm a problem solver. I come in, I fix your problem, I get out and everyone's happy and go, well, we have time for a break.
Right. Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. It feels so good when you make a client happy. It
yeah.
feels so good. It's just like, well, that's what you hired me to do.
Yeah.
And I just want to be the best. I want to be the best that you want me to be. Like, let's do this. So
completely.
Yeah, I know. I do love that.
I love that. And you know, I do love being on set too. I love the energy of set. I love the variety of the work. All that stuff is great.
Yeah.
But I think, it's not just laziness. I like going and putting costumes on and doing all that other stuff and being on set for 15 hours. But like, I also like, you know, I also like a t-shirt and jeans and a pair of Birkenstocks rolling into, you know, Voice Tracks West or Voice Caster or going in there and reading something and leaving, you know, it's nice to
yes.
have the rest of your day.
Yes, for sure. And you especially, know. I mean, I would prefer to go into a studio because
yes.
it gives me a reason to leave my apartment, but it did not suck that I was in my robe today in my closet, in my home studio.
Yes.
You know, like that was delightful. That I didn't have to go anywhere and that the sound is good and I've got great equipment and I've invested, you know,
yeah,
it's definitely been a road to where I am and I'm not even where I want to be, you know, but it's
yeah.
like, I'm so grateful to even be where I am in voiceover,
yeah.
but it's definitely been like a journey of like, you know, figuring out the next step, like figuring out the next coach, figuring out the next training, figuring out how to, you know, oh, I should have a home studio now. Like, what's the best mic I can afford? Oh,
yeah.
now I can afford a better mic. Like,
yeah.
what's the best preamp to get? And now I have to learn how to edit my projects. And like, you know, it just, all of these things take time. And
yes.
it's just, you're just building on your careers little by little.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And it takes that constant sort of internal self-motivation to continue to keep taking steps along that road. You know,
right.
You know, that the goal yeah. of ness, it's in like, it used to be for me this sense of, oh, like the things I want to be able to do, or the roles I want to be able to have, or the amount of money I'd be able to do, or whatever. And then as right. those signposts, they come and go, and it becomes more about, I just want to stay on the road and keep moving forward.
I know, right? Yes. Know? Yes.
I don't care.
I don't really care where we stop.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. Just like, keep giving me the jobs. This is yeah. great.
Yeah.
Like, as long as, I mean, I do have things that I won't do. Like, there are, you know, I don't eat meat. Uh-huh. So like, I try not to do anything for spam.
Yes.
Or, you know, like, I mean, I have read for other things yeah. and I do think about those things, and yeah. like, I try to be ethical and like, stay within my comfort zone of my moral compass. And
yeah.
sometimes I'm like, okay, well, like, I won't do things for SeaWorld. Yeah. Sorry, you know?
Yeah.
And I do have dream clients, you know, and then I volunteer like all of my voiceover services to Animal Equality for free. So
oh
any voiceover, yeah, any voiceover they need, I do it for totally for free. So like, I've done like maybe 10 or 15 videos for them over the last few years.
Amazing. Finding the things, navigating, it was one of the things I always was worried about in this business, because people had said, oh, well, you know, you're going to lose your soul if you go to Hollywood. And like, you do have to kind of thread the needle of like, what is stuff that I feel passionate about doing? What are things that crosses my line? I turned down an audiobook audition, and right. I really appreciate, I've done it on a couple occasions, and I really appreciate our reps for not, you know, pushing back on those decisions, you know, like, because if
yeah, sure.
Because it does take potential money out of their pocket. But fortunately, being at an agency like ours, where it's, I think they can absorb whether or not I do an 11-hour book or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we have to advocate for ourselves, you know?
Yes.
It's like, yes, we still want to work. I mean, if there's one thing actors want, it's to work.
Yes.
You know? I mean, I don't know any actor that's not like, give me a job. Please. I love working.
Yeah.
You know? So like, right. when we turn something down, I do feel like it is for a very specific reason.
Yes.
And yeah, you're right. We do have good reps that are like, yeah, we can take that.
Like with on that idea, like, have you, not that I don't need specifics or any of that other stuff, but like, what did you, was that a decision that you made or discovered over time? Or has it always been in you that like, nope, I got a line, I'm not going to cross it? Or Did you, is that something that developed over time where you feel a level of comfort? Like, I it was something that I, you know, I grew up in the Christian Reformed Church. I grew up in a very conservative community.
Mm-hmm.
So that was always a really? Kind of a, yeah, yeah. And very much like,
oh, wow.
part of the landscape was like, well, that Hollywood is a godless Babylon. And,
Yes, right.
You know, that was what I was taught, and I didn't believe it because it was like, there's too much good that comes out of it. And there's good people everywhere, and there's a lot of horrible people who, you know, work everywhere. You know. But
it's true. And there's amazing stories, and like, can't we hate bankers more? You know what I mean? Can't we hate Wall Street more than Hollywood? Give me a break. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Hollywood's creating stories. Like, it's, right. I don't know. I just, it's not the same, but mm-hmm, yeah. Yes.
I hear you.
Go on.
But like, you know, I think there was concern, you know, like, are you going to go out there and do pornos and stuff like that? And like, no, I'm not. That's not what I'm passionate about doing. But you
how
know,
old were you when you came out here?
Oh man, 10 years ago, 41.
Really?
Yeah, dude.
Get out of here.
I spent my whole life trying to get here. my whole life.
No.
And
way.
I came out here for a semester when I was 21 and was here for 4 months and planned on, like, it was my final semester. It was my fall year of college. I came out, I did a semester. I aced all my classes. I had a wonderful internship. I made great uh-huh. headway. I worked at a talent agency. I learned so much, and
wow.
I was coming back in the summer, and then I started dating a girl who I ended up marrying, and Los Angeles just got further and further and further in the rear view. And as much as I wanted to, you know, I started working on a TV series in Knoxville, Tennessee, and started crewing for HGTV.
No way.
Oh, yeah. And then she wanted to go to graduate school. What? So we went to Bowling Green, Ohio. And while she was there studying, I became a producer and produced interactive training. And then the Second City opened in Detroit. And that threw my life upside down. I started going up there. And
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Started getting back into improv in a big way. And then ended up getting a divorce. And
so you had done improv
in college.
Wow. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah.
You did improv. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you went up to Detroit.
Yeah. Went to Detroit.
Detroit?
Yeah. Detroit had a Second City theater, and I started doing sketch comedy and improv and teaching and directing there. And then met Sherry there, and we got married, and I was on main stage there for 3 reviews, and then went to Second City Cleveland.
Wow.
Did 2 reviews there.
Oh my gosh.
Then went to Chicago. And then finally from Chicago, we had the baby and decided, you know, let's, and then my VO career had happened in the Midwest, in Detroit. It started there in earnest mm-hmm. in Toledo, but in Chicago was the first time I really made significant money doing it. And, you know, good, consistent national work. And then
wow,
also,
cool.
I also took some workshops from Pat Fraley and from Bob Bergen, who came to town, and those guys gave me the confidence to come to Los Angeles. And then we moved here when I was 41, and we haven't looked back.
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize you've only been here 10 years.
Yeah.
I thought
yeah.
you'd been here since you were like in your 20s.
Oh man. No, I,
wow. You've killed it in a decade. You've been killing it.
Yeah. I'm doing all right.
Yeah,
it's been
good for
great.
You.
Yeah,
you are.
When did you come to LA? What was your when you made that transition and you got into VO here? You, like you told me, did the on camera and then got into VO and stuff about 10 years ago. Like,
yeah, I was 27, and it was after 9/11.
Oh wow!
There was really like work, nothing happening. Yeah. Want to pursue theater really. And, you know, people were always like, you'll never make money in theater. And, you know, I had stars in my eyes like most people do when they go to LA. And so I came at 27 and I, or 28, was I 28? Something around that, but I don't even want to tell you how long I've been here now.
I know.
I've been here 2 years. Just
been
kidding.
In 2 years. 2 years. I just got off. Yeah. I just landed.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just turned 30, feeling really good about that.
Yeah,
so
it's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh man.
But it's been a long time here, man.
Well,
I really miss like the East Coast.
Yeah. Do you see it as part of your future, or is LA is home?
I mean, I'd love to live like a rich person in Manhattan, but that's right. probably not going to happen. And if I moved anywhere, I would want it to be in like Portugal or Spain.
Yeah.
But I probably am stuck here just because of the weather.
Yes.
And my mom moved here. My parents moved here 6 years ago. So.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's funny, like LA is that place, that target place that when you hit it, the idea of going someplace else has to be for life. You know, that kind of like, I feel the same way.
Right,
of like,
right.
If I leave LA, yeah. I'm not going to.
I feel trapped here.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Like I need to like escape to a fantasy kingdom, like Stockholm,
exactly.
Sweden.
Exactly. I know.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I agree. Although, I mean, Sweden sounds amazing, yeah. And so does Denmark, but it's so cold and it's so dark.
I know. I
don't know if I can deal with that coldness and darkness.
I completely understand that. I'm Dutch. It's in my DNA. I think sometimes I have to take a cold shower and stand in the dark.
It's calling you.
That's right. A little.
I love cold water. I can do the cold water, but yeah. I know we're trapped in LA. It's so hard to leave.
I know, it's so hard with the beach and all that stuff.
And it's so hard to afford. Yeah, I know. I love the coast. The beach is the best. It's so hard to afford anything here too. It's so crazy.
That's the truth.
Let me
ask you this. When you switching gears a little bit into, because this is the kind of stuff that we never really get to talk about at the office when we're waiting or anything, but like what's your process with how you approach, and I know this is in transition for you right now too, is like this kind of a new way of working, but like how do you approach a piece of commercial copy versus a piece of promo copy, in particular, like the differences between those types of scripts that you receive. How do you talk me through that? Like you get an email and it's from, it's from Emily and it's like, okay, we have to read this. Like, what's your approach?
Gosh. I mean, I will say, I think I would have really driven myself crazy a few months ago and been like, promo's different than commercial. It's so different. It has to be read differently. But after working with my friend, he's like, I approach it the same. It's the same to me.
Wow.
Like I never am anything but myself. But you can be more epic. You can be more awe-inspiring.
Yeah.
You can be more matter of fact. You can be more edgy. You can be more flat. Like I just try to give variation. Like in a commercial copy, I might try to do two takes or three takes if it's really short.
Yeah.
And I might just try to give them like the more casual read, the more upbeat read, the more intimate read. And as for promo, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. What is the show like? Like if Smithsonian Channel, what I read for them, it was like awe-inspiring and epic and, versus something that I read for Nickelodeon promo, it's like fast paced and like higher energy and maybe even in a higher register of my voice, younger sounding. So it really just varies, but I try not to separate the genre too much because everything is so very non-selly these days.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know. Also, if you think about promo, it's like, well, I haven't read for that much promo, but like, I guess, what do you do? Like when it's different networks, like how do you approach it? I'm curious. Tell me, give me your tips.
Well,
I want some
I'll give you some secrets and some tips.
Great. Good.
Like one of the things that has helped me, it's been interesting. Like my stretch, most of my promo work has been more character driven. So like I have a promo reel of stuff I did for like ESPN and Discovery and HGTV that has kind of a more of almost a Lewis Black sort of a feel to it where it's, Nickelodeon too. Cause a lot of the Nickelodeon stuff that I see is very much like, he's a sportscaster and they're going deep. Look out. And oh, look at SpongeBob against the wall. So it's that kind of like it's one of those things that's like, if it comes to me versus going to Adam MacArthur versus going to Jeff Bottoms versus any other guys that I'm up against for a certain thing. And while Adam and Jeff have got very different styles and voices from me, if it gets sorted to come to me, that I know it's going to lean into comedy improv, it's going to lean into Midwest or louder, broader character stuff. And so a lot of the promo work that I've done has been less and listen, this vein where I do down here in the deep, you know, like,
oh, cool. You know,
that wow. kind of stuff.
I've never heard that kick before.
I know. I very rarely get to do it. You'll hear, if you listen to the auditions, you would hear plenty of tonight on, oh. you know, but it's not the stuff I close. Cause there's a lot of guys who are in that space. I did one for, it was funny. It was for a show called Punk. And it was a documentary series on punk rock music on Showtime. And
ooh, that's rad.
It was awesome.
Love to book that.
Dude, this was how I booked it. I just flipped off my microphone. I just...
Say what?
I flipped off my microphone and I just went punk on Epic. It was Epics, not Showtime. Punk. And I was... And right, I'm doing it right now. Both my... Just flipping the bird to my equipment.
Yes!
Just like, and like that... Like that kind of stuff for me, where I do try to get physical in the work I'm doing, really,
right.
Especially with character-driven stuff, where it's not as precise. I get, you know what I mean. But like hearing you talk about this stuff, like I feel like my precision can be, it falls into that place of too announcery, right? Like,
right.
So like where I'm closer to my authentic self is usually where I find myself closing. And I've been the voice of one of the voices of IFC, the IFC, you know, channel for the past 2.5-3 years now of doing that.
Such a cool, another cool gig to get. Wow. Yeah, totally. Awesome.
And that was,
and tell me about that.
That was, I booked that job eating cereal. The description was we want the world's worst voiceover talent. So I did a read.
No way.
Yeah. So the read I did was, it was super fun, dude. The read was, it was one of the first things I had done for Donna in New York. And I was nervous about sending it because it was a really bold choice. But yeah. I did a pass where I was just eating cereal while I was reading the copy. I'm crunching and slobbering.
Oh, my God.
And that won the job.
I do like, that is so cool. And did they end up using, like, did they end up?
We did a whole session where we recorded it. They couldn't, but what the producer told me was, he said, I thought it was one of the funniest reads I've ever heard. And he said, you just didn't care. And even though we wanted to use it, it didn't work. But he said, what it told us was that you understood the spirit of what we were trying to do. And that's why we booked it.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Yes. I try to make those moves too. I do. Awesome. Like I booked a really short little like AAA commercial where I played a mom and I think she was eating something. And so like when they want you to eat, I eat. Like I'm actually eating something because I just think it sounds more real. And then I'll do a take where it's not eating, you know, where I'm faking eating. But so they have that option too. But yeah, I mean, it's fun to just make those fun character-y decisions and be like, fuck it. Like, what do I have to lose?
Right.
And I bet it's even more fun for you because that is in your nature to be an improv sketch person. So
yeah,
like might as well go all the way.
I think so too. And I feel like, you know, we have the benefit of being able to send a couple takes in. And, you know, I used to live in fear of making a choice that would make the agents upset with me. Like I had said early on, you know, there doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of training for how to be an independent contractor voice actor. You say you are, and then they send you copy, and then you have, and then you do it.
Right.
And there's, you know, I'm learning this at UCLA about like, oh no, the business, it's not different. It's not different in any of the other aspects. You can be an independent producer. It's the same. Like the people can go, I'm a producer. And then they start producing. It's the same thing. You just sort of make your own way, kind of figuring out how to do it and what works and what doesn't. And that aspect of it is it's terrifying, but it's also freeing, you know, that you get to be the artist that you are, you know? I don't know.
That is the fun part when you just like send in those wacky, like fuck it takes. And it does feel like you are being more true to your artist self.
How liberal are you with the copy? I got into a big argument about this with a friend of mine about changing the copy in your audition. Do you ever do that, or do you give them as written, or because you're a comedy person. Do you make it your own?
Yeah.
In that way, or how do you approach that?
No.
Really?
No. I might add an intro line, uh-huh, or a couple intro words or a button at the end of it.
Yeah.
But no, I don't want to. I mean, somebody's paid to do that side of it. Yeah. You know, somebody's paid to be creative that way. And yeah, I usually feel like in the commercial world, they never add a line just because you've added a line. Like if it's really like, okay, sure, a grocery store spot and you add a cute little line at the end. I mean, it's not going to destroy the audition, but I don't think I would ever insert lines into the copy, only at the front or the back end.
Yeah.
Only at the beginning or the end.
Yeah.
Do you change it up?
Sometimes.
You do?
Yeah.
Say what?
If I get a spot for Lexus, right? Like, here's a luxury brand. I'm not going to mess around with their creative in any way, shape, or form. I'm going to give them exactly what they ask for.
Right.
But if it's a spot for, I don't know, Bounty paper towel, and it's a spot about, you know, here's Pamela trying to clean up the room before the dad gets home, and all of a sudden there's a mess on the floor. Whoops. Well, look out, Pamela. Here comes Bounty, because they're going to suck it up. Whatever. If it ain't rough, it ain't right. I'm gonna, you know, slur my words. I might add an or a the or something to make it feel a little bit more colloquial. I'll do that kind of stuff. I'm adding 0.3% to the copy. Or,
sure,
you know, like that, to me, that's about the extent. And I'll always give them an as written. But like, for example, there was some spots tonight that I was some spots. I make it sound like I have the jackpot. Like, I didn't do any auditions last night. But tonight I happened to have a few things to get done. But one of the commercial things was like, oh, it's like a character and he's speaking and they're going to alter his voice and do a bunch of different stuff. And the copy that's there is fine, but it's exerted. It's being yelled. The guy's clearly engaged in whatever's happening in the scene. So I'm going to give it as written was one take, and then a second take and a third take where I'm just going crazy as this character.
Right.
For me, I feel like my job is to show them two things. I got to show them what it looks like with me in the job. And I might give you some options. And B, my job is to make your copy spring to life. And if that means a lead in, if that means like an improv into it, like you're talking about at the top, it's the reason we do it. And even if it's in the middle of a copy, I'll feel a little bit more comfortable. And I also trust my guidelines. I've never gotten an audition back from Bo or Samid or Pat or Kathy that's been like, hey, will you consider doing this? Yeah, exactly. And I know they're listening. So I feel like I trust that if I color outside the lines and get slapped for it, then I'll solve it. But
my concern is how much are they really listening to? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's a longer spot, are they listening to three takes? So I want to get it in the first take.
Yeah.
And then my second is a slightly different shade.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, like, I hear what you're saying and I love that. And it, honestly, if I was better at improv, I would probably, and I think if it's a comedic spot, like if it's some funny, quirky character that's neurotic and, you know, talking about blah, 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 like Upwork, like, oh, I you know what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah.
But like, if it was something kind of quirky and fun, I might add a couple of lines of my own or some funny little noises or expressions, who knows, but I worry about how much they're actually listening to. So I'm like, I try to do two takes and like make the first one the best it can be. And that's usually with staying within their lines.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should try to be more wackadoodle and have more fun. Like, I just feel like, are these people really spending that much time? Like, I feel like the first 8 seconds they're hearing, they're probably making a decision right then and there if they want to keep going or turn it off and move on to the next person.
Yeah, I don't know.
As I'm running out of breath.
I feel like, I don't know.
Did that give you some pause?
It gave me a little pause, but here's my tête-à-tête to that. And I agree with you. I think that I always want to put my best foot forward. I'll put my best take up top, regardless of whether it's on script or not. And because I know that it's very possible that you're only going to hear me for this little bit. But I also trust a couple other things, which is, I trust the weight of my agency, and the selection of my agent to not necessarily guarantee they're going to listen to my whole take, but the casting director is going to decide if I'm right or if I'm completely wrong, if I'm interesting or worth sharing with someone else or completely wrong. And if I'm completely wrong, they'll give me 5 seconds and then I'm done. Then I didn't have a shot to begin with, whether I was brilliant, whether I was funny, whether I was warm, whether I was not, I'm just not right. And that's fine. If they give me 10 seconds or give me 15 seconds versus the 5, then it's about my read and the choices I make rather than the sound of my voice. Mm-hmm. And in that instance, I want them to see choices more so than what everybody else does. Like if it falls into that same cadence, like some copy, you know what I mean? It's like what you're talking about, like being yourself. Like you can't lose when you're being yourself, you know?
Right. No, it's true. And this is where I, like, lately I've been getting into the booth and feeling like everything I do is right. I'm just like, I'm just deciding. I'm like, oh, this is going to book. Oh, this is good. This is going to book. Yep. Yeah. I'm just choosing to believe like this is good. I want to feel that way after everything I submit. Yes. And I want to trust myself, you know, and I know that maybe I'm like living in a total dream, but, and I love that you, I mean, this is giving me pause too, because I now want to like hear all of your auditions and like, I want to see the copy and see what you've added. Cause I'm so curious now. I'm like, wow, how much are you adding? This is so interesting. And who was the person that you fought with that said, do not add anything to the copy?
Oh,
is it somebody I know?
No, no one, you know, just a friend, a fellow, she wouldn't mind if I mention it, like, because she agrees. It's my friend, Rebecca, who is a voiceover teacher. And she would argue with me about all of this, 100%. We've had the conversation, the argument, and for exactly the same reasons, you're right. Like, this copy has been poured over and approved by legal. You know, I when I was teaching at Second City, teaching improv, I kind of, not just improv, but teaching VO. One of the analogies that I shared with the students was, you know, when a piece of creative is generated, it's like this orange that's being plucked off a tree, this beautiful idea, and then. But this orange, this beautiful, fresh, juicy, dynamic and bright and fragile piece of creative is getting passed down the line to go across the desks of legal, clients, corporate, marketing.
Right.
It has to have all the juice kind of sucked out of it and flattened so that it can withstand that judgment. And then after it goes through that process, it comes to us. And it's our job.
So we get like a flat ass piece of orange jerky.
Yes. And it's our job. That's what we get.
Just kidding.
But that's what we get. And it's our job. We get to put the juice back into it.
Oh, Oh, look at you with right? that analogy.
See?
Okay, Minute Maid Man. I love it.
It's a good analogy, though. And that idea of us putting that life and that and our uniqueness into it, it's going to be different than it was in the beginning, but it's going to be better because it's been collaborated with so many people. And we can solve that problem and bring that life. And if that life happens to be an additional and or repeated line or an ad lib at the beginning. And I agree with you. I think if I'm going to ad lib, I'm going to do it at the top because I want to make sure they hear it. Right. Otherwise it's just self-indulgent at the end. Although it could be fun.
Can I ask you, what do you think about copy or direction that asks the talent to ad lib like throughout it? Mm. What do you think about that?
I mean, I feel oddly.
You probably love it, don't you?
I don't. I feel oddly.
Really?
Yeah, I feel oddly limited by it. Huh. I feel a little put on the spot. And that seems kind of, maybe it's non-intuitive, but it does feel to me like it's all in the wording, right? If they're like, we want you to ad-lib through this thing versus we invite you to do it, like we're not precious with this copy, go ahead and make it your own. I'll still only give them, I'm not going to do an 80-20 pass. It's always going to be 95-5. You know what I mean? 95 script, 5% ad lib, and that covers my ass as well as keeping me from feeling like I got to do 7 takes and every one of them has to be uniquely different and uniquely hilarious, and because that's the stuff I would rather do. I would rather spend that energy for an animated series or for like a character reel. You know?
Yeah, I don't know what we're gonna do. Like I just keep hustling because this is the only thing I do. So I'm like, I just am hustling this voiceover thing.
Yeah.
As much as I can, you know?
Yeah. That's all you really can. And
yeah,
you know, and I do feel like, you know, as it's this stupid thing, it's Morpheus in the Matrix Part 2. Where he talks about how the machines keep coming, but we are still here, and like that is the thing that gives me joy and in those dark moments in the valleys, I am still here. I am still on this mountain road.
Right.
I'm still on this path, and that, you know, I take a great deal of comfort in that, like. Even on slow days, I'm happy to see, you know, when an audition comes in, it's like, oh, good. Okay, good.
I know.
All my self-talk was wrong.
I know, right? Or like when the week starts off really slow, you've got like nothing on Monday.
Yeah.
And you might have like 2 things on Tuesday. Then you're like 7 things on Wednesday.
Yeah.
10 things on Thursday. Like, and then it starts to pick up and you're like, yes.
Yes.
I'm still alive.
Yes. The maker.
Oh, thank or those, God. Yeah.
Like those holiday weeks. Like where everything shuts down early and then there's like a flurry of activity and then nothing. And like, and it's getting, becoming okay with the inconsistency of it and trust it. And like, you know, I remember like pulling copy for a class I was teaching for like, you know, old copy that's like 8 years old, that's been run and renegotiated and run and then done. And then like, you know, taking names off of it and looking at the old emails and being like, did I used to get more copy? No, it's been pretty consistent. And there'd be a section of time where I'd see more animation copy for a couple weeks and then it would taper off and there'd be a flurry of commercial and then it would be some promo or a couple audiobooks. And then just to have this nice variety, but it was never like a consistent stream of all the colors of the rainbow of genre coming at you.
Right.
Always, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I just wish that like people would respect our profession more. Like the people that, you know, I mean, it's sad when you see such huge companies paying such crappy rates.
Yeah.
Because, and like I once went to some advertising marketing party with a friend who she know the one of the people that worked there, and they're like, oh, so you do voiceover, so you speak. you just talk for a living. And it was so like, no, dude, you know, it's not just talking. Like, right. I don't know. People oversimplify it. And when I think about all the effort and all the training and the technique that I've had to go through to be able to tell you, all I do is go in there and like be me, that, you know, I wouldn't really be able to do that if I hadn't done all those other things and learned all those other ways. And, you know, I just, it's like, well, today, like the session I had today, it was like after the first take, I don't think they even expected the first take to sound. I mean, I'm not even trying to sound obnoxious or egotistical, but like I had to read these two sections, one fairly fast and the other really fast, like legal fast. And I finished and they were like, wow, that was really good. Where do we go from here?
Right.
And that's the thing. It's like, well, I practiced, you know, I rehearsed. Just so I could be this good for you, you know? And I can't stand when people sort of downplay it. I was like, you just talk for a living.
Right.
Well, have you heard a lot of people read a piece of copy that don't know how to do voiceover? Like, or have you heard a really bad underpaid commercial before?
Right.
You know, like, come to Kevin's Auto where you'll find the best prices. It's like, who wants to listen to that? No, pay a professional.
Right.
You know? So.
Right.
That kind of bums me out sometimes that they don't value it.
I agree. And it's been one of the things that I've really appreciated about teaching has been, you know, watching people make that discovery of, of like, not only is it challenging and it's doable. You know, you can learn the tips and the tricks and the techniques to make it natural, but walking up all the things that you do face, that you have to learn to love your microphone because the mic can be very intimidating, and as good as it sounds, and how do you make it sound like it sounds in your head, and how do you make it sound like it sounds on television? All those things that professionals do without, you know, the goal is to get to that place where you don't think about it, where it is second nature, where it springs to life and it sounds like me talking, even though the words that are being handed to me are foreign to me. And, you know, and how hard and how long you work to build that skill. It should be valued and it's always encouraging and positive when someone does value it. It puts a spring in your step. You know what I mean? And I totally agree. And
absolutely.
It's amazing, dude. Well, listen, this has been such a great conversation. I've missed you, and it's so awesome to be able to.
Thank you.
To be able to chat.
I've missed you too.
how can people find you?
I hate the delay.
How can people find you, like, on social media and stuff like that?
Are you
active?
Don't find me on social media. Please don't.
Okay. Well, if they are entranced by your story, by your
hilarious,
your wit and everything that you are, how can people reach out to you and find you?
If they want to like yell at me over something about something, no, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to call that in. Twitter, Hella Barella on Twitter.
Awesome.
And I don't really look at Facebook. I kind of hate Facebook. And my Instagram is nothing to do with my life. I'm all about pictures of Los Angeles. So
that's awesome.
I don't know if people really want to see that, but
that's awesome. Do you have a work?
I guess LinkedIn. If you want to be business professionals, we can be business professionals on LinkedIn.
Yes.
That's my favorite social media, actually.
I'm growing to absolutely love LinkedIn. And
I love it.
It's apolitical. I've made connections and friends with people that I don't roll with in circles. And like, we totally connected in there. That's how we got to this place.
And
I love what that's capable of doing. And I think LinkedIn is great for so many reasons.
Me so too. Personal. I wish I was better at being one of those people that didn't write like that post I wrote today. I didn't really want to be like, oh, I think I'm so great. The session went so well. Yeah. But I also know that we do sort of have to promote ourselves. Yes. And we do, you know, that is a place for professionals to promote what they're working on, what they are doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just try to look at it like that rather than Facebook, which feels like brag book to me, yeah, you know, but, totally. But yeah, so
totally.
Come find me on LinkedIn.
Yes. I'm learning to claim my victories. I say it all the time.
Yes.
When I leave the booth, I always say it to Scott or to Patrick. I get done with reading my copy and I go, claim victory and depart the field. And
right.
I don't know why.
Love it's just, it.
But then realizing that I don't do that often, where I actually claim victory and be like, no, do that. Not to rub it in anybody's face and say, oh, I booked this thing or I'm doing that. That's not the intention.
I know, me either.
Yeah, it's to express to potential clients, either as students or producers or creative directors or casting people that, he's here, he's working, he's doing things and he's confident in the work that he's doing. And like the value that possesses, I think is important.
100%.
You know?
Yeah. I still hate the self-promotion, but we got to do it.
Yeah.
And what was I going to say about that you just said? It was good. Oh yeah. Celebrating your victories.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so important too.
Yeah.
It's so important to keep that high vibration up.
Yes.
So that you can keep attracting more of that work, because
absolutely,
that's another thing I've really gotten into. I mean, I'm not doing it every day of my life as much as I should be, but just thinking about manifesting and the thoughts I'm putting out there and the things I'm saying about my career. And,
yes,
you know I can be kind of self-effacing, but I really am just so happy to be working in this business and so happy to have the representation that I have and to know the other artists that I do, to know you, to know all these really creative, talented people. I feel really fortunate that we're doing it, you know?
We're doing it.
We're doing it, man.
Amazing. Amazing. Amelia Burrell. Thank you so much.
So corny, but yeah.
I love that it's corny, but I also love that it's absolutely true and that, you know, that we get to do something that gives us satisfaction. And
word,
you know, there's plenty of frustration, but I've been just as frustrated in every other job I've worked and none of the other jobs I've worked have given me the satisfaction I've got from this. And from that standpoint, I feel proud and lucky to be part of this community and to be, you know, among gifted, hilarious, talented artists like yourself, like our colleagues, and people that we haven't had the opportunity to meet yet, but will soon, and who will continue to enrich our lives and our careers. It's amazing.
Amen, baby. Amen.
Amen.
And you get to book jobs eating cereal.
Yes.
I love it. So good.
That's right.
Such a great story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. And thank you, audience, for listening to this episode of All Over VoiceOver. Thanks for joining us. There'll be more coming. Peace. This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH, produced by Werewolf Therewolf. Please consider giving the show a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Look, I know I keep asking for a review, but if you found just one piece of info from me or my guests helpful, please share that with me and share it and help grow our VO community. Feel free to catch up with me on Instagram, Twitter, Clubhouse, or Vero at KiffVH, or hit me up on LinkedIn. It's Kiff VandenHeuvel. Just search for Kiff. We probably know a couple of same people. And check out my website, www.kiffvh.com, for my reels, updates, and to reach out to me directly for coaching or appearances. Claim victory and depart the field. Taxi? Taxi? I guess I gotta walk from here. Okay.